welcome, welcome, welcome once again to another podcast episode and show of the TJ Macklin Show. I am your host, as always, TJ Macklin, back with episode 3 here at placetobenation.com, Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you are listening to the show. I do thank you for that. As I just realized that the Place to Be Nation, they have all their podcasts looped into a nice one package, aside from the Kevin Kelly Show over on iTunes and Stitcher. So if you download their podcast page, I guess it is, subscribe to their channel, you'll get my show, The Extra Point, when myself and Todd Gessling had our own college football show. Go back and listen to those past episodes as well. And I think The Vault is another one of the good ones there, where if you're a big wrestling fan, as you know I am, I try to talk as much about wrestling as I did last week with Big Nasty, when our race topic about black athletes and black superstars and how they're not pushed or not taken care of in the WWE. I like a lot more wrestling than just trying to look at the social minutia of the backstage area. But enough about that. Let's move on to this week's episode. Will Tidy of Bleacher Report. He's their main guy over there when it comes to the soccer page. He runs it, he edits it, hires all the writers, does all the video content, makes sure that page is up and running. And, the EPL season is coming up this week, and it's outside of probably the NBA or, God, the NFL, it's the biggest sports league going on in the world. I know I have my favorite team, Liverpool. I came into them while an NHL lockout season happened, and I needed something to do while there was no Pittsburgh Penguins hockey. And we get into that later on in the show with Will. So I'll take it behind the curtain of everything. We missed out on the first minute of the podcast just because the technical issue, but you really didn't miss anything aside from me clumsily walking over my intro of him and us just talking about how we've been doing the same show since about 2011. He's a great person to go to for all soccer knowledge. He runs a great, well-machined page over Bleacher Report Soccer. I mean, remember, after we were done taping, I looked over and read their piece on Mario Balotelli and his early years being in Italy's main guy, and then just happened to falling off the face of the earth now, as he was a reserve striker for Liverpool all last year. So, Will, great person, English Premier League, fun league to pay attention to. It's weird that their season can end. Chelsea won their title with about 2 weeks left in the season. So as an American sports fan, where there's playoffs and there's knockout rounds and there's a great regular season can be demolished by someone going cold over 4 out of 7 games, it's weird to see the regular season being the end-all be-all. If that was the case here, the Colts would be a 4-time Super Bowl champion without having Peyton Manning and having a bad game in the playoffs and getting him knocked out. So, Will, give a listen here. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Will Tidy. Myself, TJ Macklin, the show, Place to Be Nation, or anything else, be sure to contact us through that way. So, coming up here after the break, Will Tidy, thank you again for listening, and we'll catch you after the show.
Again, very excited about it. It feels like this Premier League season is particularly hyped. They're always hyped, but there's just an added hype this year. I think factors have come together to give us potentially a competitive season and some real genuine title challenges rather than just a standout favourite.
Right. So, and last year, and I'm completely blanking on didn't Chelsea run away with it last year? The season was over with at least 2 or 3 weeks to go, correct?
Yeah, Jose Mourinho came back to Chelsea for his second spell there now, and having had a building season, everything came to fruition last season. Eden Hazard was deservedly named Player of the Year and really drove the Chelsea side together with the goals of Diego Costa, the midfield influence of Cesc Fabregas, and resolute defending, I think, all round. Thibaut Courtois, great goal. John Terry still, of course, in defence. Terry Gayhill passed the share there. Chelsea won it with something to spare last season. I think some of that is owed perhaps to the lack of competitiveness from the teams around them. Manchester City's title defence was a little meek. Manchester United still very much in transition, and Liverpool a long way off. Arsenal, just the same old story for them last season.
Right. Well, I mean, with United, they have been, since they went to that transition to the new coach, they've been basically a non-factor in the Premier League, correct?
Well, Manchester United have gone through a couple of evolutions. Obviously, most notably the departure of Sir Alex Ferguson,
right,
26 years there, which was always going to be hard to get over that loss. And David Moyes came in and underwhelmed spectacularly and lasted the season and was gone. So Louis van Gaal came in as a manager with huge credentials, huge reputation, no shortage of confidence, and almost an arrogant swagger to the way he operates. Last season made some changes, but United, you felt, was still in transition. He's made even more changes this summer. A slew of new players have come in for Old Trafford. So much excitement around United and what they might be capable of.
Mm-hmm.
But again, for me, I still feel like there's too many bits to land together and shuffle for them to be genuine title contenders. I think they'll come closer this season, but I don't think they'll win it.
Interesting. Well, you know, the big news at the during the, I guess, the off season, Van Persie, he left United, and I think he went to he went to a Spanish league team, correct?
Van Persie actually left for Turkey, which is quite an interesting move.
For Turkey, even worse.
He's gone to Fenerbahce, the same club that Manchester United's Nani transferred to as well. So the two of them were in action actually yesterday, and they got knocked out of the Champions League. So no Champions League football, Van Persie. I think there were some surprise that he left, but it was not a great season for Van Persie last year. He struggled with injury, didn't look as sharp as he might have done. And I think his time was coming to an end at Manchester United, so I think they took the money while they could, and he's off now, yes.
So to make it an equivalent to, you know, the States here in our sports, he was an overpriced free agent that United brought in that didn't pan out, much like, say, you know, a baseball team like the Yankees would bring in a giant first baseman that fails to live up to expectations.
Yeah, I think with Van Persie, I don't think there'll be regrets from a Manchester United perspective, because they brought him in from Arsenal. His first season was a huge success, and he helped Manchester United win the title that Ferguson's last season. But since then, it hasn't really happened for him. So I think the value they got in that first season would probably make them feel like it was a worthwhile endeavour.
Mm-hmm.
But you just didn't feel, at this point in his career, in his early 30s, you just didn't feel about that he had many more strong seasons in him. So I think for United fans, they've come to accept since the middle of last season that he would probably go. He wants to play regularly, and I don't think he's guaranteed to start in this United side. So he went, and he's gone to Turkey, and so is Nani. So it's interesting that they would go there, but the money is an offer, and there's no shortage of passion for the fans. So you could see how it would be an appealing arena to play in with the passion of the Turkish fans, for sure.
Right. So let me bring this up back to the States again. In basketball, Kobe Bryant is going on his swan song these last few years. Derek Jeter had his retirement tour. Is that the same thing with Rooney, or is Rooney still have a couple more years left in his tank?
Oh, I tend to think Rooney's got some good years left.
Really?
I really do, yeah. I think he's looked extremely sharp in preseason for United. And I think he's a player who very much reacts to what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with United, there's a sense of real renewed purpose, renewed optimism with a manager like Van Gaal in charge, with the kind of players they've brought in. We're talking about some really premier players in world football that have come in this summer. Bastian Schweinsteiger, a World Cup winner with Germany, a Champions League winner with Bayern Munich. Somebody of that caliber coming into the dressing room. I think for a player like Rooney, that gives him, perhaps there was an element, there was a little too much responsibility on his shoulders, and it doesn't really work for him. I think we need Rooney just to focus on doing his job, scoring goals. I think he'll be the front man, the target man for Manchester United this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he seems to be very fit and looking lean. And we have had seasons where he's come back in the summer and maybe looked like he's perhaps eaten a little too much, to be honest with you. This season, not the case. He's looked very sharp in pre-season, as I said. I expect him to hit the ground running. I think he could have a great campaign. He's not the player he once was. He's not a ferocious knockout puncher of a striker was in his early 20s and even late teens.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a more nuanced threat now, and I think that intelligence, the game smarts that he has, he's still hungry, and I still think there's more to offer from Rooney than perhaps some would suggest.
Right, and, you know, he's still, I think, the most notable player going in the Premier League on the most notable team that anyone knows from United. So let me switch gears here. I try to support one squad as a fan. You know, when I think we first talked probably back in 2011, maybe 12, the hockey lockout just happened. Actually, it was 2011. I remember this summer, fall 2011, when hockey went on their little lockout, and I got into Liverpool. So that 2012 season, they were all right. The next year, they should have won the Premier League. It wasn't for their epic collapse. And last year, they stumbled to fall outside of Champions League. So what should I expect from Liverpool this year?
I think Liverpool is a hard one to know where they're going to finish this season. They obviously have had the season to win. I was driven by the Suarez, who had a remarkable season for them, leading their line and scoring at a prolific rate. Now, having lost Suarez at the end of that season,
right,
there was always going to be a dip. I don't think we expected it to be quite as violent as it was last season. Liverpool really dropped out of the reckoning. This season, hard to tell. I think the signing of Christian Benteke is very positive. I think he's a striker with the potential and with the personality that may rise to the challenge at Liverpool. We've seen a lot of strikers over the years come into Anfield and be a little overawed.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if they're coming in to something with too much history and too much pressure to perform. The romance of it, I think, can be overwhelming at a club like Liverpool.
It's really?
It's an incredible arena for the fans there, the history, the pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Benteke already scored a fine goal in pre-season. I think he's an aggressive player. He's proven at Premier League level. I think Liverpool fans will enjoy watching him. Coutinho was excellent last year, so I expect him to have another good season. They have Jordan Henderson, who has been one of the most improved players, I think, in the Premier League in the last 2 or 3 years. The question that Liverpool fans are asking me and are worried about is, do they have what they need in front of the back four to keep their goals conceded column at a level where they're going to compete for Champions League spots? That's the concern for Liverpool right now. They've got nuanced attacking players, they've got exciting players, they have a striker in Benteke, but they don't have that line in front of the defence that all the other challengers have. If you look across the side, you have a Chelsea, you have Matic, who can do that in there like a beast. You look at Manchester United now, they have Schneiderlin, who can do it very well. Arsenal have a couple of players in that area who can do it. Manchester City, too, has the likes of Fernandinho, Yaya Toure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Liverpool are lacking. They're lacking in that area, the shield in front of the back four.
So basically they have Skrtel and then a bunch of no-names that will have to play above their skill set to have them finish in the top four.
I think the concern is do they have the spine all the way through?
Okay.
It's about the spine. We talked about this with title-winning sides. If you look at Chelsea last season, Chelsea through the spine is Courtois, world-class goalkeeper, John Terry, world-class central defender, Nemanja Matic, world-class holding midfielder, Cesc Fabregas, world-class creative midfielder, Diego Costa, world-class striker. Now, right through the middle there, you've got the players that are going to win you a title. I think Chelsea are going to be taken by Arsenal this season, because Arsenal are looking the closest to me to emulating that, having put, ironically, Petr Cech in goal and stolen him from Chelsea. They now have a spine that looks capable of doing it, I think.
I love how you refer to it as a spine. I wish hockey and football would consider their defense a spine. That would be great. If I'm a Steeler fan and I hear that, Cameron Haywood is the head of the spine of the defense, I wish they would adopt that. That's phenomenal. So, and we brought up Rooney and his swan song, which isn't going to be a couple more years. And we talked about Kobe and him finishing up and Jeter, him finishing up. I completely forgot about Stevie G. Gerrard finished last year and it was sad the way it finished for him because Liverpool just kind of crapped the bed, for a better term. They lost him, so who steps up as the face of the franchise?
The face of the franchise at Liverpool, I think you're looking at Jordan Henderson as being the leader that comes in and assumes the... Now, Jordan Henderson is not quite the player going forward that Steven Gerrard is. He's not a barnstorming goal scorer. He can score goals, Mm-hmm. But I think he's shown the maturity that he'd be a leader, and he can hold his place down there. He's going to be an England regular, I think, as we move forward towards the Euro next summer. So I think Jordan Henderson assumes that responsibility as being Liverpool's off-the-field leader. And I think we'll see him grow. He's a strong character. He's very focused. And I think Liverpool fans are going to gradually be used in a different way by him. I think they're already very fond of it. But I think as time passes and they see what he's putting in and how committed he is, I think there's every chance Henderson can become somebody who they admire him already, but perhaps someone who they ultimately fall in love with, as they did with Gerrard.
Is it going to be too much for him to handle, though, you know, bear the weight of what Gerrard was for Liverpool, or is this something that he's a veteran enough that it's a pressure that he can welcome and, you know, take on?
Well, I think they're different types of players, so I don't think he'll feel that pressure that he has to score the goals Gerrard did, or he has to be the type of personality Gerrard was. I just think he will feel now comfortable. He's assured in his team. He's earned the right to be a regular in Brendan Rodgers' starting lineup. I think there's an element of comfort that comes from that, but also responsibility that drives. And I think he's in the right spot right now. I don't think he's someone who's going to rest on his laurels. I think we'll see him. I think the question, I was put this last week, I think the difference for him will be now, can Liverpool have the type of games against the big teams
right, where
they really start to show they're competitive again? And that's where Henderson can perhaps grab it by the scruff of the neck with a lot of young, talented players around him and say, listen, if we're 1-0 down against Chelsea at half-time, this is where maybe Jordan Henderson needs to be in the dressing room with Rodgers and saying, come on, this is... And that's maybe where Gerrard excelled before, even when he wasn't a regular... That was his area, probably, you'd imagine, in the dressing room, to stand up and say, come on, we've still got this. And I think Henderson will assume that now.
So, last question here on Liverpool before we move on. You spoke about Rodgers. His first year, kind of a clunker. But, I mean, it's a new coach coming in. It's not like the United coach who just completely destroyed any reputation he had coming in. It was fired basically before the season ended. Second year, as I said, great, but they had the collapse at the end. And then last year seemed to be a down year. Is he one that might not make it toward the end of the season, or is it going to be something where as long as they finish in the top four, it's not going to, he'll be fine?
Very interesting to watch what happens there, I think. The idea with coming in was that it was a project. It wasn't a quick fix. Liverpool want to emulate, as much as they would deny this, they probably want to emulate what happened at Manchester United. It will never happen again quite like it did with Sir Alex Ferguson. The patience isn't there in the game anymore, and the money is too big for it to be so. But I think there was a blueprint for Rodgers to be given 3 to 5 years. I think time is between short one. I do want to see it come January. Liverpool are outside of the top four. If they're out already of maybe one of the major cup competitions, then I think he's in a very precarious spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's what stays. I think they've obviously decided, the owners, Fenway Sports Group, obviously, who own the Boston Red Sox, have made the decision, John Henry has made the decision that Rodgers is still banned, and they still trust in him. They've trusted him enough. But at the point now, when you trust their manager to make the transfer decisions over the window, you've then got to give him the faith until at least January, otherwise it's kind of a waste of time. So I do expect both he and Manuel Pellegrini at Manchester City to be given this run now until January, but I think both of those, above any other manager in the top half of the table, are under big, big pressure if their team is not inside the top four come Christmas.
Wow. So, top four here last year was Chelsea, City, Arsenal, and United, with Spurs and Liverpool, just on the outside looking in. Now, are there any of the second-tier teams, like your Southampton, your Swansea, your Stoke, or even an Everton, that may shock us all and make a run for that top four spot?
I don't think so, actually. I think we'll see a hot start from one side or another. And my outside prediction is actually that we might see a hot start from Newcastle. I think they've got Steve McClaren has come in to right the ship, and I think we might see a reinvigorated Newcastle. They're always a team that if they get on the right foot, they've got such a passionate fan base, they have such momentum, that I think they could have an early run. I really do, as shocking it would seem based on their abysmal season last year. I don't think there'll be any big surprises. Come January, I think everything will have righted itself, and I think the top five will be, as I expect them to finish, I'm going to go bold. I think Arsenal will win the title. I just think it's their year. I think they've got a little bit more than they had last year. I think Chelsea will come second, but very close with Manchester United will be third. And then I would pick City to be fourth, Liverpool fifth, but I think both of those will sack their managers if that's the way it falls out. And I think Pep and Manchester City will be the first to go in the 51 at the top race Christmas, especially if they have a bad start to the Champions League.
Interesting. Okay, so we spent basically the entire show talking about English Premier League because here that's what I guess us Americans we focus on most when it comes to soccer. Maybe a little bit on the Spanish side, with Ronaldo and the Messi. But outside of this Premier League, what should we be paying attention to aside from one soccer star having his dog being named Ronaldo?
Well, I think there has to be major focus, obviously, on the Spanish league, on those two teams, because they are the two, I hesitate to say, magnetic teams to watch. But I think you can't, if you're looking for glamour and glitz and you're looking to see the very best players in the world, then those two players are Messi and Ronaldo, and their teams are obviously Barcelona and Real Madrid. So very interesting to see how they start the season. The trio of Messi, Neymar and Suarez were outstanding for Barcelona last year. So expecting to see some of the same from them. Messi looks very fit coming back into the side. Neymar looks very fit. As for Real Madrid, they have a new manager in Rafa Benitez, so it'll be interesting to see how he lines things up. We had a lot of doubts over Gareth Bale last season. Real Madrid have all their major guns firing. The big question for them is whether they can keep carrying Benzema into the new season, or whether indeed he might move to the Premier League. Either way, we're going to see James, Ronaldo, Bale, the usual suspects at Real Madrid. Very excited about what they do.
Didn't Neymar like break his spine or break his back during the World Cup? I mean, it's amazing that he's back to being normal and like he suffered a broken whatever it was during Brazil's game.
Yeah, it is remarkable how the recovery speed up these days. I think he was obviously treated in the most intelligent way possible, and given every advantage that you would have at that level. And he came back and obviously played a telling part in Barcelona winning the treble last season. They were back, and they might order another dynasty under Luis Enrique. So the challenge for Real Madrid this season is how do they answer that? And Ronaldo, of course, motivated as ever by his own ego and his own sense of legacy, it will be fascinating watching him, perhaps with time running out on his clock, watching how hard he's going to strive this season. Can he improve on the remarkable form he's had over the last few seasons?
And I'm glad you brought up legacy, and I do want to touch on the USA women's and men's team here before I let you go and just engulf yourself in all things City and United over in Manchester. Ronaldo, Messi, both phenomenal players, probably the best in the world. Yet they don't win for their country whenever it's the World Cup or some of the other major tournaments. You know, what does that do to them, you know, legacy-wise?
I think it's the question that never goes away for Messi. Yeah. I think the difference with Ronaldo is that Portugal can't be expected to compete with. They were runners-up in the 2004 European Championships, driven by Ronaldo, but they're not a major force. And for something to happen for them, it would take something remarkable from Ronaldo to drag them. But Messi is a different case entirely because Argentina are a very strong side and should be challenging there or thereabouts, as they have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very hard one to figure out. We don't quite see the free-flowing Messi in Argentina colours that we see in Barcelona colours. Whether that is because he can't access that type of play in that shirt, or whether it's more about the style that Barcelona play and the fact he's so familiar with the players around him playing for Barcelona. That's the million-dollar question. And, you know, I think he's running out of chances to answer it, really. The Copa America was a disappointment again. There's, you know, perhaps one more World Cup for Messi to be at his peak, which will be Russia 2018. And, you know, after that, I think it's a stretch to think he would still be at his absolute best come Qatar I say guitar wherever we're going to be in 2022.
Right.
It comes up time and time again. And, you know, how do you answer it? The Champions League is really the ultimate level of soccer these days, played at a higher level than the World Cup. So Messi's won that several times. But still coming back to the World Cup, and when you say Maradona won one and Messi did, a lot of people will say, well, you know, that makes Maradona a better player.
Right. It sounds like the equivalent to LeBron versus Jordan, where the LeBron supporters, myself included, are like, just look at his body of work and look how much more of an athlete he is. And the Jordan supporters, just like the Maradona supporters, just yell at you rings and titles, and you just get annoyed by what they're yelling at you, and you just kind of go away.
Yeah, I think there are some similarities, because I think in American sports, it's very interesting that the franchise that you play for, you know, you can be a standout player, but if you're playing in a weak franchise, you're not going to win a title. You can come close, as LeBron did last season, obviously, but there was always that difference in class, I felt, watching that. I hate it. I'm not a basketball expert, so I went with depth, but when you watch the Golden State Warriors, they were always a better side, a better team than the Cleveland Cavaliers, in my opinion. It was just a question of whether LeBron could take this team to another level on his own, and he wasn't capable of doing it on his own.
And at least and in basketball... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think that's the same accusation you might level occasionally at Messi, that Argentina aren't quite there. They weren't quite good enough to win the World Cup, but maybe if Messi had had a big showboat game, they would have won it, and he didn't. And maybe the same accusation could be levelled at LeBron. As much as he had standout performances, there were a couple of playoff games and games in the finals where, had he been, you know, the 40-point guy, he would have won the game for him. You can't do it all on your own, and it's a lot of pressure for them both to be under.
And it, you know, at least in LeBron's case in basketball, it's a best-of-seven series. If Messi has an off game in the World Cup, especially in the knockout round, they're done, and you have to wait for 4 more years. So I feel bad because it's a small sample size to where, say, he was playing in that Germany game against Brazil, and Germany just comes up and just steamrolls him for 7 goals, and what are you supposed to do, you know? Just like, it's not his fault they go up 7 goals, but it gets all leveled on him, and the legacy talk. But, you know, we'll go with the tournament play-in. Before we touch on the women's side, we'll go with the men and the Gold Cup. Is it a non-issue that they lost to Jamaica in the semifinals, or a bigger issue, or, you know, we really shouldn't care until, next year whenever the next big tournament starts?
I think it's a big issue. I think it's a really big issue. And I think there's a very real danger that this US men's team is going to provide some spectacular anti-climax after the hopes and heights of the World Cup.
Right.
And in a way, it's not Jürgen Klinsmann, his team. They drastically overachieved, I would suggest, at the World Cup. And sort of clung on to get where they got to and earned all kinds of plaudits, despite being really played off the field by Belgium and could have lost the game 6-0 if not out. So I think the same problems exist that have always existed for the US. They don't have the depth of quality. They don't have enough players that are playing in the elite leagues. And they are getting by on grit and grip to let them qualify for the World Cup. But I don't think, unless they change their blueprint, unless they find some young players between now and the World Cup who can really step up and provide quality for them, I think they're still at the level where we're going to go into that next World Cup and say, well, if they get out of that group, that will be an achievement. And, I think it's very misleading to look back on that last World Cup and think it was a real sign of progress. I'm not so sure it was. I think it was a sign of a team that came together and played with immense pride and immense togetherness, and were more than a sum of their parts. But I don't think there's much to suggest that you could back the US to get to the quarterfinals or beyond to the next World Cup right now.
So then, what's so it's false hope whenever they go off when they beat one of the Europe teams, when they beat Denmark, or when they beat I think they beat someone else over in Europe during an exhibition match. It's false hope to think that they can hang with them, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they beat Germany, I think.
That's what it was. I couldn't remember who it was.
You know, It's just that any time you beat Germany, it's a massive scalp. But, you know, we point out, we say to US fans that, you know, other teams beat Germany. It happens. You know, Northern Ireland have beaten them in recent years. And, you know, England had a famous 5-1 victory against the German side any year else. But, you know, you're going to have these games in friendlies, particularly when it can happen. And I just wouldn't read that much into it. I think the US side, the same side, they also won in Italy, which was impressive. So what that shows me is they've got a togetherness and they've got a strength of belief and a strength of character that they can go and win against big teams with big names. Now, there's no undermining that. That's a huge thing to have on their side. But fundamentally, they do not have the quality or the technical ability that when it comes to a major stage with both teams set up to play, they're going to win. They were miles away from Belgium in that game at the World Cup.
No
and they clung on because they had a world-class goalkeeper. So they've got to make some, they've got to find some players, and sooner rather than later, there's got to be some players coming through. We've got a few hits. Maybe DeAndre Yedlin is one who may play regularly for Tottenham this season. We hope he does. Aaron Johansson is, you know, there are names, but none of them have really reached that tier where they're in the top 50 players in the world yet. And that's where they need to start having two or three players.
So it sounds like when Josie went over to the Premier League and we thought, this is our guy, he's going to be great, and he kind of just laid a turd over there and never reached up to the potential he could have been. And now, I mean, he's a second thought to the American team, right? Or is he someone that in 2018, we should still consider him our elite level striker?
Well, I think you're just looking for the next one now, because you've got Michael Bradley as the natural leader and the best player, I would suggest, is that America has to call on. He's gone back to MLS, which I understand why, but I don't think it's for the best for the US team. I think it would be for the best if he was playing at the highest level he could in MLS. Clint Dempsey is obviously still a high-level performer, but again, playing in MLS, but he's not playing at the highest level he could right now. And Clint Dempsey's running out of years, you know. So you're looking at who is that guy that's 20 right now, 21, 22. Who is that next leader of the team? Where is the talent? Where's the real talent going to push forward? And unfortunately, you look at the women's game, it's team all over the place. And in the men's game, they're not quite forthcoming yet. And they haven't, you know, I think until the US starts producing players that are top 50 that are playing for the Champions League teams in Europe, I don't think they can expect to be truly competitive in international tournaments.
So it's funny, I like whenever after Bradley scored the big goal to help Mexico get into the World Cup, I think their Mexican announcers called him Dr. Doom or whatever Spider-Man reference it was. Man, I'm blanking on what it was. But it's a shame that, you know, the way, you know, the Premier League and the Spanish leagues and all professional leagues, they can go out and buy players. I just wish for our nation we could just go out and throw $80 million at Ronaldo and be like, here, come play with us. I wish that'd be great if we could do that. Just countries can go out and buy players. Wouldn't that make the World Cup so much more interesting?
If the U.S. could buy players?
Yeah, just we'll go out and spend like $800 million on Messi. Come play with us, you know.
Well, listen.
Neymar, come on over here for $60 million.
It doesn't happen in that kind of transparent trade fashion, but trust me, it's happening all around the world. These federations are digging in and seeing who's got an American. The U.S. Federation right now will be looking and seeing what players out there have got an American grandmother.
It's weird.
Got some distant American relative. It happens, all the countries do it. Germany have done it as much as anybody else, to be honest. I mean, players they brought in, Mesut Ozil famously, you know, I think of Turkish birth, and was found to have German ancestry and therefore was brought in. You know, so that's certainly an area. But, you know, America's such a big country, surely. It's just a matter of time, because the youth soccer is really kicking in here. I think it's just going to take a generation before we really see it all come to fruition and we see a generation of players in the US that's every bit as good as the generation right now from Belgium, which is a kind of a freak generation for a small country, but the US will be producing that regularly, I think, in 10, 20 years' time.
Well, let me ask you this. What has helped more produce the next wave of people? Because I have a daughter, I mean, she's only 5 months old now, but I'm sure in 2-3 years, her first organized activity will be youth soccer, because it's you roll a ball out and people can go run, chase, and learn some drills. But has the emergence of the FIFA game from EA Sports, has that helped help this new culture of kids pick up soccer and be able to enjoy it?
Oh, unquestionably. I think there's several factors at play, and there's no doubting the growth of soccer here. I live in the US, and the questions I get about it now just grow in volume every year. Everybody's kids play soccer here, and as doubts continue to grow about parents who don't want their kids to get their heads bashed in playing football,
right.
you get more and more. You know, soccer's cool. It's being fashionable. It's very accessible. You don't need a lot of equipment to play it. It's not that expensive. You know, you have kids of different sexes. They can both play. They can often both play at the same time. So it all comes together to make it very easy. And I don't know many parents. I'm a parent of two boys myself. I don't know many parents around here in North Carolina whose kids don't play. You know,
right.
Everybody plays.
Right, exactly. And it's an easy sport, like I said. You just roll a ball out, get someone that may have played in high school or whatever to be a coach or a parent that can organize it and just roll from there. So coming up here towards the end, as I said, I have a daughter. She just turned 5 months. We watched the Women's World Cup together, as in she kind of just laid there and slept, which is basically like any casual soccer fan would do, I think, of the first 45 minutes is just wake me up whenever it's the last 60 or the last 20 minutes when they're about to win. So she'll be about 4 once the next Women's World Cup comes about. She'll know what sports is, and she'll have a good understanding of what soccer is as well. Once 2019 comes around, can I expect the same outcome to happen for our women's team? Or is this something to where they got lucky this year and, you know, winning?
Oh, they weren't lucky to win this year. I think they played almost the perfect tournament. You know, to come into a World Cup as they did and just reasonably slowly. Germany are the great masters of the men's. You come in, the early rounds, there's often a question mark. Are they good enough? Are they up for it? This is not quite the Germany we expected to see.
Right.
And as the tournament progresses, they delivered. And in the final, they delivered probably the best final performance we've ever seen.
No kidding.
From any team. So, yes. And if they don't, you know, they've got the ultimate platform. They have the best team in the world, unlimited resources, and really everything in place to ensure that in 4 years' time, if they haven't done enough to motivate a girl to play now, I don't know what more they could do. I mean, already you're starting to see 19, 20-year-olds come into this squad that are already saying, the reason I play is because I watched Abby Wambach as a
kid.
It's the same way that you've already heard Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan saying that the reason they play is because they watched Mia Hamm as a kid.
Right.
And this is a secular thing. It will continue to happen. This team has inspired another generation now. And I think the U.S. capably could win the next 3 or 4 World Cups.
Wow.
I mean, they won't, because that's not the way these tournaments work. There's so
right.
much luck involved. But, you know, they will be among the favorites for the next tournament for sure. And they're doing something wrong if they don't win at least one of the next 2 or 3.
So I can have my kid, Kennedy, get completely engulfed in the flag, get her a Carter Lloyd jersey, paint the face up. I'll have to match paint face as well, because that's what a good parent does, and I don't want to be screamed at for not being as patriotic as my 4-year-old. But we can completely throw ourselves into the 2019 Women's World Cup, because she won't have her first taste of crushing defeat and start crying.
Yeah. That's what it was about. My son, only a couple of months ago, my 7-year-old was in tears as he found out that Robin Van Persie left Manchester United. This is the heartache that you've got to come.
That's true. I mean, for professional sports, I'm all Pittsburgh, so. As a Penguins fan, we've had the two best players in the league for the last, 7 or 8 years, whatever it is. And every year they have a crushing defeat in the playoffs, to where I get upset and my wife looks at me and goes, "You had nothing to do with this outcome. Why are you so upset?" And I say, "Stop being so rational. I cannot just, let me be just secretly angry right now." And I just go from there. So hopefully she gets my wife Sarah's personality when it comes to these things, and not my blinding love for anything that is black and gold out of Pittsburgh. But yeah, Will, this is a fun 30 minutes here. I wish I could talk to Flakegate with you and what English Premier League, you know, over... Well, real quick, what in the English Premier League has been completely overblown, like this Patriots to Flakegate, to where you look at it as a professional and you're like, why are we still talking about this? this is a non-issue, but yet the media just keeps on pounding it and pounding it and pounding it.
Well, I think the example this summer has been Fabian Delph. Fabian Delph is a great pro, a player who's done wonderful things for Aston Villa and happened to go about things the wrong way. I mean, he was offered a move to Manchester City. His heart said no, so he said no. And he said publicly no, which was a mistake. and then he changed his mind, and then it made him look like a bit of an idiot. And he has been absolutely just vilified.
Right.
I mean, excuse the pun for an Aston Villa player, but he has been deemed to be the evilest of the evil. And really, all he did was have an initial pang for the club. So I don't think it's so much. I mean, players leave, players come and go, they're earning their money. And I say to people that question Dell, you know, you have a job right now. If someone gives you twice as much money to work somewhere else, you're going to take it.
Of course.
You know? So, I mean, that's where I think we go. I understand where the heartstrings get pulled, but let's look at these athletes and understand ultimately that they've got a very short time to make their money. And, you know, Dell, a good guy. I hope everyone gets back on his side. When he starts the season with Manchester City on the substitute bench.
I mean, really, you're rooting for Laundry, is what it is. You're just rooting for Laundry. You're not rooting for the player. I know if Crosby goes off to, say, the Carolina Hurricanes, I'll be upset, but I'm not going to all of a sudden become a Carolina Hurricanes fan. I'll still be a Penguins fan. So you're just rooting for Laundry. Yeah. It's going to upset you, right?
Yeah, it's just like the first girlfriend who dumped you. You know, you're stronger for it. You find somebody else. And you move on.
That's right. Okay, so Bleacher Report, soccer side, Bleacher Report UK. I mean, your page is filled with stuff now, from TeamStream to your piece on Balotelli of the early years. I mean, I'm assuming this upcoming weekend and going forward, you're going to be wall-to-wall all over this season.
It is actually a really exciting time for Bleacher Report. I'm going over, we're opening a full video studio in London. We've hired a couple of very good analysts who will be working full-time out of that studio in central London, just delivering analysis and breaking news. We've got what we think is a stable of some of the best writers in the world, all over the country, in the UK and all over Europe, covering teams. And we're just really excited about some of the long-form special projects that we're really getting stuck into, you know, investigative journalism, indulgent stuff that we think people will enjoy. And then social media is really popping. I think last week there was a day when Bleacher Report was the most successful page on all of Facebook. And, you know, that was, and our UK page was number 7 on the same day. So our social reach is a big focus. We're trying to do fun things, several things, the bubble bird, everybody's kind of snackable stuff. So, yeah, I'm pleased to still be involved. You know, a lot of people have come and gone over the years I've been here, but I'm clinging on. And, you know, it's good. It's a good company doing good things, and hopefully more exciting stuff to come.
I mean, you've been on with them since, what, 2010? Because I know we started doing this 2011, and, I mean, just going from there. And that's when I was around there for that. It's gone from, you know, the 50 slideshow of top European wives and girlfriends to now your long forms.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get away with publishing anything like that anymore.
No, God no. Which is great, because it makes you guys legit.
Well, I think two phases. I think there was an initial phase where we had to build an audience, and I think some of the ways we did that were by the ways that we could afford to, and then now we have the luxury that I can have a budget and I can go and find a writer. As we did last week, we found a writer and we sent a writer to New York to interview David Luiz for an hour. What a luxury having this, you know, great content. But we're lucky to have the platform that we can do that, and we just got to make sure we use it in the right way.
There we go. Well, I'm sure you guys will for this upcoming season. Will Tidy. Follow him at Will Tidy on Twitter. I'm sure your readers will love everything you have, and the comment section will be nice and fair, and no one will have anything bad to say.
Thank you so much, Izeva. Look forward to chatting this time next year.
All right, there's this week's episode with Will. A little earlier than normal. I know we usually come out on Tuesday and Wednesdays. I asked the, you know, JT and Brad over at Place to Be, who edited the show, if we could have this out a little earlier. They obliged and said, go ahead, we can do it, just because the season starts on Saturday. And a lot of stuff isn't very time sensitive, but it's, you know, want to make sure we get everybody who is searching for EPL before the season. And so if you listen to it today on Friday or Saturday, excuse me, that's great. If not, Tuesday, Wednesdays, when the shows come out, we will be back, not next week, just because this is the week three's podcast, but week four, we'll be back again at a normally scheduled time of Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever you know, it happens to come out from those 2 days. Nice little guest lineup here the next coming weeks. I'm very excited to hear and talk to a couple more of my friends, a couple more people in the sports world, maybe do a little episodes outside of sports as well, or ones that mix sports and pop culture. Let's see what we can do for that one, so we're not just talking about the NFL or pro wrestling, or in this case, you know, how in 4 years when my daughter is enough to know what sports is, her and I painting her face up because you know, wouldn't be the bad dad that doesn't go with what she is going to do. So, for the show, TJ Macklin Show, I am TJ Macklin as always. I guess I kind of butchered that at the end. So, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.